Hello, everybody. Happy day. This is episode 53 of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Aloha.
Hakuna Matata.
Means no worries.
Yeah. So my name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
My name is Jared.
And tonight on the Big Planet Comics podcast, we got stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's episode 53.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It is a lot. What is 53? Can you think of the number 53? Does it mean anything to you guys?
5 + 3 = 8, and 8 × 2 = 16. Yeah, that's it.
I thought you had it.
16 is the number of car crashes that Nick has been this year.
That's true.
You can, as always, subscribe to this podcast on Internet Tunes.
Yep. Internet Tunes. You can go to the Facebooks.
Yep. FAC Electronic Book.
Mm-hmm. And you can also go to the other thing.
I thought Jared was going to say that part. You can go to the other thing, which is?
Twitter.
Do I have a bird sound? That's what birds sound like. Yeah. That's all those together. Sound
like. all the birds in like the Muppet Show sound like.
Those sound effects.
But yeah, do a search on Twitter for Big Planet Comics or type in at Big Planet Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Type it.
Woo.
Type it on your internet phone.
Tippity tappity.
Yeah, so what's been going on, you guys?
Chirp.
Oh, I didn't do it. You did it. Whatever.
Even funnier. I went to Baltimore this weekend, last weekend, for their Art Fest, which is a giant street festival where they close down like 3 or 4 blocks now. It's getting really big of the downtown area, and like have not like the Inner Harbor, but like actually a part of Baltimore that I hadn't been to much. Right next to their art college, which was really cool.
Like not roped off for gang violence, but like for this festival.
No, like a few blocks away from that. They had like performers and artists selling stuff. And apparently there was a video game arcade, which I missed entirely, which kind of made me mad. But it rained, so nobody showed up. Except for us, which
so
is awesome.
You weren't playing video games.
No.
Oh. So what did you do there?
We walked around. We got some snacks because they're handing out free Oscar Mayer. Wait. No, who has that giant Oscar mobile?
Oscar, that's Oscar Mayer.
Free Oscar Mayer hot dogs. I couldn't remember.
Who drives the Oscar mobile?
I was just checking.
That's Hebrew National.
I don't know, man. Everyone's buying everybody out.
Cool.
But yeah, it was free. Hot dog.
Free hot dogs. That's what Jared did this weekend. He ate a free hot dog. Live your life. Hey!
I had some hot dogs this weekend, too.
Did you? Were wow, that's great. I actually had a hot dog the other day, too.
Yeah. I went camping, though. Mine was cooked on a campfire.
Wow. Where'd you go?
This place 2 hours away. I forget what it's called.
What state were you in?
It's in Virginia.
All right, that's a good
start. Still
in
Virginia, about an hour and a half away.
But like the scary part of Virginia?
Yeah, not too scary. It was
like
out in the
white water rafting.
Near some rivers and
overturned,
stuff.
Some dramatic events happen.
The whites of West Virginia.
Yeah, thanks to all the recent storms, there was a lot of firewood everywhere.
Oh, that's cool.
There were like entire trees.
Good point.
I drug an entire tree over and put it in the middle of the fire.
You drugged a tree?
I drugged it.
You drugged it up.
Is it dragged?
I think it's dragged.
It could be dragged.
I don't know.
But drug got the point across too in a funnier way.
I drugged a tree and put it in the fire.
You drugged it.
What happened with me?
Hey, Kevin, what's going on?
I thought I was going to have to move out of my house, so I started frantically selling things.
Yeah, it was really creepy when you showed up at my house with all this stuff in your arms.
I almost had a free kidney.
But so I've been selling all my old issues of Walking Dead on eBay because, you know, I read them and I have hardcovers of them and things.
Ka-ching.
Yeah, I know. Those things are worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like which ties into
$4
a question.
$5 each.
Ties into a question we've got a little bit later. I sold Walking Dead number 4 for $89. Not to toot my own horn, but... Nice.
There you go.
I didn't know where not to my own horn, but mer. And besides that, I don't know. I just finished Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Oh man,
sweet!
The television show, not the movie.
I finally started watching it too.
I need to start watching it.
It's so good.
Just started.
One of my friends just finished watching it the second time.
Yeah, a friend of mine watched it all in 3 days.
Wow.
After I told her about it, and then I say a friend of mine, Jessica, friend of the show. Hey, what's up, Jessica? Best friend.
Hey, girl. Friend of the show?
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
It's more like the show's her friend.
Friend of... She's somebody's friend.
Is she?
Yeah, well, so everybody is.
She's
right?
a friend of the people.
Aang's friend.
She is a friend of Aang, which sounds like some weird kind of organization that Chick-fil-A would not approve of.
Also true.
Cool. So, yeah, that's about it.
Yeah,
those are the things that have been going on.
It's true.
That's cool.
Some other things are going on.
What other things?
Movies?
Upcoming signings and events.
Oh,
on movies. July 28th, we've got Matt Dambisky, writer of the book Zock.
Shock.
I'm gonna. I believe it's pronounced shark.
I believe it's Xock.
Which we're going to talk about a little bit later. But he's going to be at our College Park store from 11 to 1 and at our Vienna location from 3 to 5.
Vienna location.
Guy. Yeah. And then on August 18th, I think we talked about this last time, but yep. Mike Rex, creator of the Tyrannosaurus Rex and writer of Fangbone, is going to be at our Vienna store from 11 to 1 and our College Park store from 3 to 5.
So awesome.
Awesome.
It is awesome.
And the third Fangbone will be out by then, too. I'm very excited.
That is true. All right. So you guys want to get in some news?
Yeah, why not?
Let's do it. All right, so we've got two news items here. First,
Devolve hot dogs.
In one of them does involve toasters. In Batman Incorporated news,
oh yes,
this is they're actually two news items. So, I guess also me and Jared both saw Dark Knight.
Yep. Yeah.
But we're going to talk about that next time.
To give everyone a chance to not get spoiled by this right on the cusp of cutting edge reporting.
Because I have to see it too.
Yeah, I think maybe we'll do a separate Dark Knight spoiler cast.
We should. That'd be pretty good.
We should do a movie spoiler cast.
Would that be like a 3-minute podcast where I was going, it's awesome! And we're done.
I don't remember what happened in other movies that I saw. But anyway, so here's a quote from Grant Morrison about Batman Incorporated and Action Comics. All right, so he says...
That's not Scottish. Oh, you're just prepping. All right, go.
I can't speak Scottish. He says, the Action Comics run concludes with issue 16. Batman Incorporated wraps up my take with issue 12. And after that, I don't have any plans for monthly superhero books for a while. Multiversity is 8 issues, and I'm 30-odd pages into a Wonder Woman project, but those are finite stories. So it looks like he's doing a couple miniseries after he wraps up his run on these books.
Right.
And then it doesn't look like he's going to be writing any superhero comics, which means he's probably not going to be writing anything for DC at all for a while.
He's done
that. Oh, yeah, if you're not doing DC stuff. Then
yeah, he's not doing anything.
No, but he could do, like, Vertigo, and he's also got that new Image book that's starting up.
Yeah, that's not DC, though. That's what I'm saying. It seems like, you know...
He's done with superheroes.
I would say Grant Morrison is in the top 4-5 writers that DC has right now. Well, really in the top 2, but if you're going to talk about the 5 kind of big guys
support them.
Yeah, which is like... Jeff Snyder, Lemire, Scott Snyder, Jeff Johns, Grant Morrison, and Brian Azzarello to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Just because of Wonder Woman, which is so great. But it seems like a pretty big blow to DC Comics.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But is he actually saying that's in reaction to stuff? Or
he's not saying that specifically, but I'm not saying it's as a result of anything that's going on over at DC Comics.
Like he's wrapping
I'm
up.
Just saying for either way, no matter what the reason, it's a pretty big blow for them to lose a big writer like that, I feel like.
It's true.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I'd be curious to see who takes over Batman Incorporated and...
It's such a Grant Morrison
Action Comics
book.
That's true.
And not only DC, but Marvel do not have a good history with people taking over Grant Morrison stories when they're done.
Yeah.
Because you've got like...
X-Men was good.
Yeah, Chuck Austin, right?
Oh,
took over that.
Oh, God.
And then when he finished JLA, I think Mark Waid wrote some stuff, but then like Chuck Austin took over that too.
Chuck Austin has taken over all of his books.
And
maybe they'll get Chuck Austin to write Action Comics now.
Hopefully. Maybe he's changed his name again.
Fingers crossed.
So we talk about Scott Lobdell, but I mean, Chuck Austin, man. That guy is the worst.
He's the Scott Lobdell of the 2000s.
No, Scott Lobdell was the Scott Lobdell of the 2000s.
Was he around? Yeah. Did he do anything in the 2000s?
Yeah. As far as we know, X-Men books?
I don't know. Probably. But as far as we know, Scott Lobdell never had to come up with a alias for himself to get work because people knew that it would hate it so much.
That's true.
Under his regular name.
On a side note, Scott Lobdell taking over Superman.
Yeah.
But he's off Superboy now.
Yeah.
And they're replacing him with Tom DeFalco.
So what happened? I thought Keith Giffen was taking over Superman. Was news that we had reported before.
Well,
he's now taking over He-Man.
It's true.
After one issue,
they had to shift. I guess he was just writing more important projects.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of He-Man, Joshua Helfiakoff and Fraser Irving are doing a Skeletor miniseries, which seems like it'll probably be cool.
Yeah.
I guess He-Man's cool because like people were kids when that came out.
It's like, yo, you know, Michelangelo, could you help me paint the side of my house? Here's some white paint.
Yeah,
it'll be a very nicely coat of paint on there, but kind of a waste.
Well, I don't know if Joshua Hale-Veacoff is quite Michelangelo, but at least he's like a talent that, you know, maybe
it
you
is
could
a talent
stick,
that is being squandered.
That you could stick on a Superman book instead of Scott Lobdell, or stick on Superboy instead of Tom DeFalco, who's taking over that when Scott Lobdell leaves. So, So I thought that was interesting. I'll be curious to see what they do to fill in the ranks. I'm assuming Howard Mackey will start writing more books, or they'll give six more books to Rob Liefeld.
So I guess after that, I'll be down to 12 of the DC books, the new 52 ones.
They're knocking them off one at a time from you.
Yep. That's how many books have been canceled as well since they started.
Only 12?
I think 12 or 14.
Oh, batches of six each time?
Yeah, 25% of their line.
Yep. Ouch.
Yeah. But the new stuff coming out looks pretty cool, so I'm definitely excited about that. And there was a new DC book today that was pretty promising. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
True.
And in slightly more serious news, this is a kind of a strange thing. So Batman Incorporated number 3 was supposed to come out this week. It shipped, but retailers have been asked to delay its release
by a month.
Sensitivity concerns in the wake of the shootings in Aurora, Colorado.
Yep.
Which that was a big news thing. I don't know how much we really want to talk about that. I mean, obviously people know that it was a terrible thing that happened. And
yeah, it's pretty interesting. At first I was like, I guess they're just not releasing Batman books for a little while. But then like Batman Dark Knight came out today.
Yeah, no, this was specifically, I just flipped through it. Jared, did you actually read the issue?
I did. It was really good.
Yeah, but there's some stuff involving a school shooting in the comic.
There's a brainwashed teacher who busts into a classroom and then like using weapons to, you know, force the kids to listen to her, starts preaching revolution. So there's not a shooting event, but there's a teacher in a school with a gun and
that's probably
hostage
enough,
children.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, I can understand. I mean, I don't fault them for it. I mean, it makes sense. And I'm glad they are not like censoring completely. They're going to release the issue next month. But I can understand why they would just want to avoid anything that has anything to do with that.
I'm still disappointed that they did, but. Yeah, at least they didn't pulp the run and rewrite it or something.
Yeah, and the shooting was actually took place really close to Columbine, so there's that whole connection as well, which is really strange. Yeah. But I thought it was cool. I saw Christian Bale went down to like the hospital and visited a bunch of the people and stuff. I thought that was like a class move.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool.
So anyway, that's a little more serious than we usually get on here, but I thought it was worth mentioning. All right, so I'm going right into this.
What you got
in Rorschach toaster news? So here's a quote from Dynamic Forces.
Okay.
Dynamic Forces is proud to announce our newest license with Warner Brothers Consumer Products for a line of collector toasters. So there's a whole line of
for toaster collectors, you know.
No, collector toasters. For toaster collectors.
Hitting both markets at once.
I feel like that's a new thing, a toaster collector. But anyway, so these are like, they burn images on toast. Yeah. And there's like a Wizard of Oz one. There's a Friends one, because, you know, Friends.
What?
That, you know, I don't. What does it even have on it? I don't even know. Like the logo?
That's a good question.
There's a Nightmare on Elm Street one. There's, I don't know, like a bunch of them.
It's that one just like cut your toast up when it comes out. It's in three pieces.
I guess. I have no idea.
But the most important one.
But most importantly is the Rorschach toaster.
No.
That is Rorschach from the Watchmen.
Yep.
So all the complaints about before Watchmen can now, you know, that can be a very respected decision that was made by Warner Brothers in comparison to the Rorschach toaster news.
Does this one come like out of the toaster and it's been cut in half with an axe?
Yeah, it's and it
says like up yours, Alan Moore.
It does.
It's got a big dollar sign on it.
On the back it says Rorschach created by DC Comics.
That's true.
But so it just has like a picture of the Watchmen from the movie, I think, on the side of the toaster.
Right.
And then it makes toast and that has Rorschach's face burnt on it.
Yeah. All right. See, I would actually be okay with this if they'd somehow figured how to have like two moving parts in it so that depending on what, you know, just randomly, it would burn a slightly different pattern to match his mask every time.
That would creep me out. I want to know how my toast is going to toast.
Then you shouldn't be eating Rorschach toast.
That's definitely true. So yeah, that is a very strange thing.
Most importantly, how much does that cost? Yeah,
I do not have the price on here, but I'm going to imagine it's around $59.95.
I believe the answer is a bargain at any price.
All right, so
wow,
that's it for our news. Big news all around.
No. Yep,
from the serious to the terrible Rorschach toaster news. Rorschach toaster news, the true tragedy. All right, so you guys want to do some viewer mail?
Please.
Let's do this.
Your new Viewer Mural song sounds exactly like the X-Men theme song.
It's true. I remember last week I said I was going to replace it with something else, and I don't remember what that thing was.
Yeah, we'll work on it.
Yeah, well, we're hard at work. Well, we've got a bunch of people working on it. All right, so we've got three questions this week.
Uh-huh. Oh, wait, I remember Swamp Thing's theme song.
Swamp Thing theme song, yep. to the cartoon. That is, yep, a good one.
We're on it.
All right, so here's the question. How much of a role does the collector aspect play in any of your comic purchases? Do you buy comics anymore for variant covers, first prints, classic issues you feel will rise in value, or do you still get comics just to have them? That doesn't say or at the end. It's just like, you know, I
sure
mixed in with that. So that's a question from Aaron Myers. And I would say sort of sometimes.
Adventure Time, Mr. Kevin.
Yeah, I do. I buy all the Adventure Time variants, but not for the collector value as much.
As the awesome value?
Yeah, but it is the, like, I get them just to have them, yeah, kind of thing.
Well, that's kind of a problem, I think, with a lot of variants. Maybe not so much now as a few years ago, when you would have, like, very rare covers where it'd be like, for every 200 printed, there'll be one with this cover on it. And it would be a fantastic artist, which in some ways was better than the regular cover. So it was a problem of, like, this really cool cover that no one could get.
But then also a lot of the time it's like a sketch variant or like a black and white variant.
No, that's a few years ago. Now it's much less like that. But you remember, like, I don't know, just like if you see 3 or 4 years ago, they'd have really cool artists like LeDron or, like, you know,
or
Travis Charest.
Like,
yeah, Frank Quitely doing a one comic that only every 200th person would see.
Yeah.
So nowadays, yeah, it's just a, they don't have the time to hire or the money to hire a real artist. They just do a black and white version of the regular cover.
In general, I usually just buy comics for comics. Every once in a while, I'll buy something. I'm like, this could be worth something.
Yeah, but, like,
not too often, though.
Like, I bought Saga because I was like, oh, maybe Saga will be worth something. And, like, it's cool.
In the future, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But I don't typically buy issues of comics anymore so much.
Right.
I buy collections and things.
Yeah, me
so
too.
When I do buy an issue, which is just very rarely, but it's usually because it's got a cool cover or something like that.
Or something weird. Like, for example, I bought, like, Punisher Max from last week just because it was, like, a one-off Punisher thing, and it was,
right,
like, one of the most awesome Punisher things I'd read in a while.
Right, and maybe you don't want to buy the entire Untold Tales, yeah, of Punisher Max,
yeah, because each one's a different story.
Yeah, but this one
artist
is pretty awesome. Yeah, that artist, Willemson, is pretty awesome. He's, yeah, going to be doing Wolverine Max coming up pretty soon.
Oh, really?
So that should be pretty,
sweet,
exciting. Yeah,
that's
written by Jason Starr, the guy who wrote The Chill.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so hopefully that's going to be pretty good.
Interesting. Yeah. I will say that I hate variant covers in every form.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they are a bane on the industry.
I do think it's kind of strange sometimes. But then, again, at the same time, I like to buy the yeah, Adventure Time ones if it's the one with the art I like the best.
Sure. But so
it's a weird thing that's created just for kind of resale.
It's preying on the idea that somehow you're going to buy Action Comics in 1938, number one, and you will then send all of your descendants for 1,000 years to college afterwards. It's trying to artificially recreate this idea that comics are hot, that they're collector's items, and you're going to make money off of them, when really it's just, in a lot of cases, I feel like preying on the collective, like, not collector, the completist nature of a lot of comic book readers,
yeah,
who are just like, I have to have every issue of something, well and good, but I have to have every cover of it, and there's 10 covers, and...
Yeah, I think definitely.
It's cheap.
Don't buy comics because you think they're going to be worth money.
No,
If here's the kind of the way that I always think about this. If you have a budget for what you're going to buy for a week or whatever,
right,
and you are going to buy two comics, don't buy two different covers of the same comic. Buy two different comics because then you get to read two different comics.
Yeah,
yeah.
And reading comics is the true joy of comics, not
yeah,
storing them
in a
box that eventually, yep, feels like an albatross around your neck because you have too many of them in your house,
yeah, right,
and like you feel smothered by them. That is not what comics are all about.
And you've doubled the chance of having a valuable comic.
It's true. Yeah. So, because your variant covers are not going to be worth any more in the long run than regular cover. The things that end up being worth money are things like Thief of Thieves number one or Saga
number one
or Walking Dead,
which was a small comic from Image when it came
out. Those are the things that end up being worth money are comics that surprise people with their quality,
true,
and become very popular.
Yeah.
So they make TV shows out of them.
Yeah, and like Chew or
yeah,
Thief of Thieves or, you know, a number of things that have come out in the past few years that
yeah,
have like people maybe didn't know they were going to be so good, and then they all got snatched up. So
yeah,
try new stuff, and you've got more of a chance of having something that's worth money than if yeah, you just buy some dumb cover
and something
of
and
Dark
worth
Knight 11
and, and worth something more than money.
Yeah,
yeah.
True joy.
True joy.
All right, thanks for the question, Aaron. I should have told somebody to do research. I feel like Nick will know the answer to
Nick's
this.
Nick's always ready for these.
Okay, the next question comes from Victoria Gregory. Mm-hmm. Victoria says, I wanted to read up on the X-Men series, but there is a lot to catch up on.
Indeed.
It's true. Like 30 years at least. I wanted to inquire where I would need to begin to catch up on the X-Men Avengers to make any sense of the insanity, and what's the proper order to continue reading to that point. Thank you very much, Victoria Gregory.
Well, the easy answer is to just not do it, but like just start reading it after Avengers versus X-Men. Because after that, kind of everything's sort of starting over. Like Marvel is kind of touting it as like their new season of shows. So basically, like everything that's kind of happening now, it won't matter like later, but it won't be. These stories kind of coming to an end now, and they're moving on to the next thing. But I mean, if you really want to catch up to it, start with like Messiah Complex.
That's what I would say,
and then skip ahead to like Messiah War, and then Messiah.
You can even skip Messiah War, but Second Coming.
Second Coming is the last one, and then
Schism.
Yeah, and then there's the Utopia one. In between there, it's between Messiah Complex and Second Coming is the Utopia trade, which is like a Dark Avengers X-Men fight that
I just thought of something.
Establishes Utopia.
When they first did it the first time.
Yeah, and Messiah Complex establishes hope.
Yeah.
Second Coming kind of ups all that and puts it all together and kind of see the beginning of the conflict with the X-Men with Avengers
I feel like Schism is a big one too.
Yeah, I feel like a short-term answer is if you just want to read the current stuff, X-Men Schism sets up why the X-Men kind of have a division within them, hence the Schism, and that kind of is enough to get you started on it, but
but the main story that's going on is the Hope stuff, and I feel like that runs through the stuff Nick said, especially if I was going to read three things, it would be for me Messiah Complex, Second Coming, and Schism.
Yeah.
Like my wife is reading X-Men, and she read Messiah Complex, she read Second Coming, and then she read Schism, and now
she's good.
Well, now she's going to read Wolverine and the X-Men, but not Uncanny X-Men because she hates Cyclops.
That happens. But I was just thinking, it'd be really cool if we write up like an article for the webpage, kind of listing this out, because this is a very common question. There's like, especially for Marvel, who's like DC used to be even more, you know, at fault for this of having like this huge ongoing storylines. They'd be like, oh, you have to go back 20 years to catch up with some of these characters.
Yeah.
And for X-Men, Avengers 2, like when Bendis took it over in what, 2000, 2001, you know, they've been basically doing a 10-year, 11-year long set of building storylines. So I think it'd be kind of cool to be like, here's the order you read them in, which a lot of people don't know, and here are the important stories of stuff. So
maybe we should make an infographic.
That's what I'm saying. That'd be kind of cool too.
All right, so hopefully that answers that question, and then maybe we will have more detailed information on the webpage because Jared just gave me more work to do.
Nick do it. Nick's our go-to guy on this because I'm sure that everyone listening to this podcast just wrote down the 12 graphic novels he recommended you read.
Nick does not know how to use the internet.
No.
He also doesn't know how to write. We'll work on this together.
Or read.
All right, so we got one more question this week. This is from Philip Slingerland.
All right.
That's a good name.
Yeah. He says, hey, guys.
Hey,
dude.
Whoa. You mentioned one of your recent podcasts that you tend to focus on new titles to discuss during your reviews.
True.
I certainly understand why you do that. Thank you for understanding. But what are some of the ongoing titles that you guys take for granted or that you constantly enjoy? Well, the ones we take for granted, we probably wouldn't know, right?
The ongoing titles we take for granted, we probably do not read anymore.
I totally take all these comics for granted. Yeah, I don't. The ones we consistently enjoy, and I'll try to think about take for granted. I mean, there might be ones that actually I know I take American Vampire for granted because I've only read like the first 5 issues and I really enjoyed it and I just need to get back to it. I've been taking it for granted.
I take Fables for granted.
I need to treat my baby like a princess.
Yeah, I drop on and off of Fables. Like I'll read 2 or 3 issues at once and then forget about it for a few months, but it's consistently good. It's not as great as it used to be. So
Unwritten is like that for me too. I'm like, I read the first storyline, loved it, fell behind, and now I'm like 30 issues behind. But stuff that, you know, regular stuff that we kind of keep up with. I mean, there's Scalped, which always is good, which is ending soon, unfortunately.
Saga.
Yeah, Saga's kind of new.
Taken for granted. That's true. But, that's a good point.
I mean, I've been reading all the Spider-Man stuff Dan Slott has written since, you know, last 5 years or whatever, and that's been always good. We never really talk about Spider-Man too often.
That's true. Usagi Yojimbo, it's on issue 140 something.
Yeah, that's a big one for
Jared. 200 or 300 issues. It's always awesome, but I always just know it's awesome, so I forget about it sometimes. Yeah. Ultimate Spider-Man, I guess that's still a newish one, but
we kind of talk about that.
All Jared's are at the end of the alphabet because he's just looking.
That's the only part I can see
at the wall over there. Yeah, I like to keep up with the like Grant Morrison Batman stuff. I enjoy that a lot. I think we've mentioned the DC books we kind of keep up with. I think Wonder Woman is kind of my big favorite book right now, which is crazy because I just never would have thought that. I definitely keep up with Spider-Man as well a lot, and then The Boys is a great one.
That's one we never talk about, but it's always awesome.
Yeah, The Boys and Scalped are probably two that we all read,
but it's been like 5 or 6 years since they started, so we just
never mentioned them on the podcast. But they're two of the best series that are coming out, and they're both ending.
We should talk about both of the last issues of those series as they come out.
Yeah, I think that's
kind of important for these finite series that have been running for a long time, like DMZ or Why the Last Man or whatever, where the ending is kind of important, because a lot of these series, people are often disappointed by the endings and stuff. Like Preacher, I know, had a lot of fallout from people disliking that ending of that one, although I think it's better now.
I think it's fine. I think people were not happy that Preacher was ending. And I think the cool thing is you don't get to see comics that run 50, 60 issues and then have endings a lot.
You're seeing it pretty often now. That's kind of the go-to Vertigo link.
What have there been, like 10 different series maybe that have done that? No. And that's about it in the history of comics?
Yeah. No, it's, you know what, 9 trades worth of stuff?
Yeah. There's just a handful of those things.
Jack of Fables, Why the Last Man, Transmet.
Yeah. Like
Invisibles.
Yeah. Like
all Vertigo books.
That's what I'm saying. It's kind of
just some
Lucifer.
Yeah,
but that's kind of the serious, you know, we're telling a story, but not like telling a Cerebus or a Spider-Man story.
Right.
Length of.
Oh, Morning Glory is also another one that I read all the time and always love.
Yeah, that one comes out so slow now that we tend to forget about it too.
Yeah, so that's a few.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're good.
Hopefully
ones.
That answers your question. Some of those we've mentioned before, but some of them I don't think we've ever uttered their name on the podcast.
That's true.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. Well, so that's all the questions for this week. Oh, Phil also says, P.S., you should do another live podcast. It sounded like it was a good time. I'm glad it sounded that way.
We fixed that up in the studio to make it sound good.
That was
added an applause track. And
we added happiness in post. No, it was a good time.
It
I think,
was awesome.
I think
yeah,
we'll definitely
awesome.
Do it again. Maybe episode 75.
That's our goal, to maybe do it twice a year.
Maybe do...
Recover a little bit.
Something. Yeah. I think every 25 episodes is pretty good. So we'll see what's going on. But thanks, Phil, for your question. And thank you, everybody else, for your questions.
Woo.
If you have questions or comments, you can send those questions or comments to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. Or you can call the podcast hotline at 1-703-539-CAST.
And leave a voice message. I just want to make that clear because I think a lot of people expect they need to call in at a certain time and like talk to us. Don't worry about it. Just leave a comment.
I think people just don't care. But
I have faith in you.
But if you do
your cowardice.
If you do care, that number... 1-703-539-CAST.
That's easy to remember.
All right, let's do some reviews.
We love comics, they're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
All right, it is time for reviews. That's what the song says, so that's what we're going to do.
Alrighty.
It was kind of a small week this week for new titles and graphic novels, things of that nature. There were a couple cool things, like the Daredevil collection came out and new Scalped collection, but those are not what we're going to talk about, even though they're awesome.
That's true.
So up first, we've got Debris Number 1. This is written by Curtis Wiebe, who I always say is the writer of Atomic Robo, but he's not. He is the writer of
Green Wake. And something else more recently.
Yeah. And this has art by Riley Rossmo, who has drawn quite a few different image books at this point.
Did he do Viking?
Cowboy Ninja Viking.
Cowboy Ninja Viking.
There we go. Yeah.
He did Red Blood.
Rebel Blood. Did he
Red
do
Blood.
Proof? That's a different
thing. He did Proof. Yeah, he did Proof.
He did recently
that Wild Children.
Wild
One Shot.
Oh, yeah, that
Children.
Graphic novel.
Yeah. And this new series is pretty crazy.
It's called Debris.
Is that what it's about?
Debris.
It's about a bris.
About Debris.
It's about Debris. It's kind of like the movie The Hood or The Wood. Is that movie called The Wood?
The Wood.
Yeah, it's like that, but it's about a bris.
So what is this comic about?
So what is this comic actually
about? This is weird because I read a manga a couple of weeks ago called Attack on Titan or Attack of the Titan. What's that called?
Attack on Titan.
Attack on Titan,
called,
which is about a post-apocalyptic world where there's a city of the last of humanity and there are giant monsters attacking it. And then we reviewed a couple of weeks ago another one called Planetoid, which is about a guy who crash lands on a planet of mechanical monsters. Throw those two together, you're getting close to the plot line of this one.
I could see that. But this definitely has like more of a like as maybe established society than something like Planetoid. Yeah. But
that's what I'm saying. Throw them together.
Oh, throw them together. I didn't read Attack on Titan, so I'm not sure.
You should. It's
but besides that, what is this comic about, Jared?
All right. So there's a kind of ruined world, and there's a society of like warrior protectors of this very, very small pocket of civilization. There are mechanical monsters roaming out in the wilderness, some of which are gigantically, massively dangerous. And they're worried that they have to send more people. What do they have to send people out? Why do they have to recruit more people to be warriors? Can't remember.
I think just so they have more people to protect the city.
Yeah. So basically, like, there's so few people left that they're like having to drop the like the minimum age for people to join the like military or their protecting force. Yeah. Well, because there's so few people left.
Yeah, they're the last of humanity. They're the last tribe.
So presumably, the rest of humanity has been wiped out by these things. Yeah. Which I guess is an alien invading force. If this is Earth, I don't really know.
Not sure.
But mostly, this is kind of a big old fight between the main character
Maya
and these creatures which are called Avios, and
those might just be the bird ones. I think
is that just okay.
The big one she calls Jormungand, which is the serpent that eats the world in the Thor comics or mythology.
In the Thor comics, in Bullfinch's The Mighty Thor.
that's our modern mythology, sir.
And that's pretty much it. There's a big fight, and then kind of, I don't know, some back at base camp stuff.
Yeah, it's like setting up a bigger quest. Yeah. But this is just a miniseries, right? Yeah, four. So,
yeah, I actually really like this, even though it's kind of, you know, there's not a lot going on in this.
Yeah,
what we described is happening, and then this sort of young girl is gonna have to kind of go out on her own to. What is she?
Find some more humans.
To help them, basically. And,
to quest.
Yeah. But what I did like about this book, I like the art a lot. Riley Rossmo.
Awesome.
I think keeps getting better and better. Yeah.
This is my favorite thing by him I've seen. Like, I liked his proof art, but in Wild Children, too, there's like a kind of slashy, sketchy style to it. And this one is so much cleaner. I don't know if he just like did better, like thicker lines on it, or the coloring was like brighter on it.
The cleanest stuff.
I like all that like ink splash speckle stuff enough.
Right.
But I feel like also it's like window dressing and it doesn't really.
True.
Like a lot of proof like didn't have backgrounds and stuff like that. Especially Cowboy Ninja Viking was like that. Like he would just like splatter ink, which is like fine, you know, but you know, it's also you're not Ralph Steadman or whatever.
Yeah,
and
also this is radically different coloring than anything he's ever done. It's a lot more bright and more kind of cartoony sort of.
Yeah, the color palette and a lot of the art reminded me a lot of Mobius. And
But the design on this, like the monsters and the world and the background, like it's all really cool.
Yeah, and it's so that part of it is awesome, I feel like. And the story is good enough, like a Mobius comic.
Right.
It's like the story just has to be okay enough to pull you on through, and I feel like this does that.
Well, I feel like this is a sort of like they did the Marvel method where they had like, you know, Riley drew it and then the other guy wrote the script for it and then they went back and put in the words. Or, you know, he did the plot first or whatever, but not as well connected up as like it should be. So, yeah.
I could see that, though. Curtis Weeby is a good writer, so...
Yeah. So, it felt a little out of sync. Like, the story was, like you said, good enough to get it through, but... Just
did Riley Rossmo also draw Green Wake?
Yes.
Yeah, and the art... Like, you look at the art Green Wake compared to the art with
very
this,
different.
And, you guys will kind of see what we're talking about.
It's pretty amazing that this is one of the few guys, I think, who has a lot of styles, and they're all really good.
Yeah, so, you know, I think... Especially if you're into stuff like Prophet or... But what are the other
Planetoid?
Planetoid,
Attack on Titan,
Higher Earth,
Mad Max.
What was the other? There's like another one even. Extinction. Like all these comics that are coming out right now. So,
yeah.
But this adds to that kind of Mobius influence bunch of stuff that's coming out right now, and
which is a good way to go.
I am fine with that.
Yep.
All right. So up next we have a one shot, unfortunately, that came out this week. This should be the first issue of an ongoing series, but this is so I'll start out by saying this is National Comics, which is DC's new series where it's going to be a series of one-shots about particular characters that maybe don't have their own books. A big complaint about the DC relaunch for a lot of people has been like a lot of these smaller, basically any, if you don't have a book of your own, you don't exist in the DC universe at this point. All these side characters that used to create this rich tapestry are just gone. And, you know, if you don't have your own title, you're just, that's it, you know?
You could have your own title and then have that title canceled and show up in other books, but they're not really introduced. I guess they're doing it for a few characters are showing up as guest spots, but not a lot. So,
yeah.
That's
so this first issue is called National Comics Eternity, which is Kid Eternity. And this is written by Jeff Lemire, who you probably all know at this point.
That we like
but
him.
He writes Animal Man. He writes Sweet Tooth. He wrote the Essex County stories. He wrote a book called Underwater Welder that we're going to gush about. get it? Gush. Yeah. later on in this very podcast. And he wrote this. And the art in this is by Cully Hamner, who has drawn a million things, and for some reason I'm blanking. I know he drew Blue Beetle, right?
Did he draw Red? Beetle?
Yeah, he did Red.
Yeah, he did Red.
That got turned into a film.
He did Shade recently.
Oh, yeah.
His art's a little inconsistent in this. I thought it was not some of his best art. It seems a little rushed or something, but still good. But the story is excellent, and it makes me wish that this was one of the new 52 relaunch books.
Me too.
Like, the you know, instead of...
whichever one Dan Didio's writing.
Phantom Stranger or whatever. Why don't they do this, like, Eternity book? Because it's great. It sets up a good, like, mythology. And basically it's about this guy who dies, comes back to life, and can now talk to the recently deceased.
Yeah, the basics of Kid Eternity, right? Like, Kid Eternity was a Grant Morrison series, actually, right? Grant Morrison and...
He was created like, a long time before that.
Oh, was he? Oh, okay.
Because he was created from the time of National Comics, whenever that was.
Oh, okay.
Which is way back. And then, you know, Grant Morrison kind of changed him a little bit and made him Grant Morrison.
Pulled an Animal Man.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Yeah, so, yeah, he's dead. He talks to the recently deceased, and he's helping this guy.
But it's cooler than that.
Well, like, he goes to, like, kind of like limbo. Like,
purgatory or whatever.
Yeah,
I think if you describe exactly what it sounds a lot like True Calling, so I don't know if it is.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, really? I didn't watch
that. He goes to, like,
now I want to.
He goes to the dead bodies, puts his hand on them, and then instantly goes to limbo, and he has to find that person, and... help them kind of solve their murder.
But he's able to bring their spirit back to Earth for 24 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's exactly like True Calling.
Shh, don't tell me that.
And but then there's like some weird stuff going on. There's somebody else also taking people from limbo and you're not sure why. And then there's like an interesting mystery that's introduced at the end.
Case. And the whole mystery of this one I thought was even cool.
Yeah, his case has really an interesting good. Twist to it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So the things you were talking about, the interesting mystery that is revealed at the end and this other mysterious figure who shows up, I think all that stuff is great, except this is a one-shot.
Yeah.
Well, as it says, the end in the back.
So yeah, this which feels... is like, we're going to leave the door open in case, you know, we want to do something. But, like, you know, just look at the scripts that you sent and decide that this is a book that you're going to put out because it's really good.
Yeah.
But it also has those problems we always talk about in first issues of, like, you know, like, it's hard to talk about them sometimes because they just set a lot of stuff up. And this sets a ton of stuff up but they're also not going to do anything with it.
But it also has a complete story. So I think it nails that problem so well. Admittedly, it's, 32 pages long. So it's a longer story than a lot of starting comics. But
yeah, the cool thing, it has like one self-contained kind of main mystery that's
solved. Which definitely, I mean, it's you know, I'm complaining because I like it, basically. Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying you get a lot for your money's worth, too.
So it is a great standalone story as well, but you're going to want more. And, like, this isn't the best art Cully Hamner has ever done, I will say that. Yeah. But it still is, like...
Great.
Yeah, it's still better.
It's
still a lot better than your average run-of-the-mill, like, kind of superhero art that you see from, like... It doesn't have that house style. It feels
That's
like Cully Hamner. And, like, there are interesting things with art. Like, there's a really cool balance between, like, the first page of the story... And the last page of the story. Yeah.
What?
Stuff. And
that's
like,
awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a cool comic.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Yeah, so definitely check out Kid Eternity.
So, yeah, if you guys are wondering back to our question about one comic you might just want to pick up by yourself, there you go. Get it.
Yeah, this isn't going to be worth any money, but yeah.
No, but it's great.
Actually, it might be.
That's,
I bet nobody ordered this.
We did.
All right, so up next we've got Spooks number one, volume one, The Fall of Babylon. This is by Javier Dorison, Fabian Nuri, and Christian Rossi. I didn't actually get a chance to read this, so I am going to give the floor to Jared.
All right, so Dorison and Nuri co-wrote this one. Dorison's done some other stuff. I think he did The Sanctum, kind of sci-fi horror book that's one of my favorites from the European scene. So first, this is a Cinebook book. So this is a translated one from France, I believe. So this one is basically like BPRD side of Hellboy, where you've got the Spooks. The group here is basically, and it stands for Specialist in the Odd and Occult. It's abbreviated very poorly because it's translated from another language. But basically, it's like BPRD investigating supernatural stuff in the Old West. But this main story is set in New York, or East Coast anyway, so you get the kind
of... So not in the Old West.
Yeah, it's the New West in the East.
The Old East.
Yeah. Yeah. But you've got, like, you know, the Indian guy who's, like, a specialist in Catholicism and, you know, the tough bounty hunter. It's, like, all those kind of guys thrown together.
And Truman.
Yeah. Really?
Well, he's not on the team, but he...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
President
under,
Truman?
Under yeah. President Truman. Yeah. But, yeah, it's, like, all European comics that I've ever seen. Some amazing, amazing art. The story, though... Not quite up to snuff. It's like, I don't know. What do you think, Nick? It's kind of like so complicated as a plot that you kind of lose.
Yeah, the story's a little too overcomplicated. There's like a little too many characters and not enough background on what's happening. You kind of just get introduced to characters, but you're not sure who they are and what they have to do. The story, like, I kind of liked all the characters and I liked kind of the story and some of the stuff in the story, but it's way, way, way too wordy.
Yeah.
Like, people talk too much about everything. Like, I mean, I don't know. There's just like pages and pages of like just word balloons in there. It took me out of it because I kept getting like really bored.
That's why I didn't read this actually. Yeah. I got to like, there was like an hour left before the podcast and I was like, all right, I'm gonna read this. And then I started like flipping through it. I was like, there's no way I can't read this in an hour.
Yeah. I mean, there's for example, there's a scene. The whole basic scene is this guy has beat his son and his daughter's coming to confront him. And they're arguing, but it's so long. They argue for like, it's like an hour long conversation about like why this is happening. I mean, like, just, you know.
So how
trim it down?
How does the translation feel? Does the dialogue read well? Like,
it's actually not bad.
It's okay. It's not really written in like a. It's like a really dry, kind of boring way. Like it's translated all right, but.
It just doesn't have much personality.
Yeah, it doesn't have much personality. It's just like people are like, oh, I have to go here and do this, and this is happening now because of this. Like, there's nobody... It seems like everybody's kind of monotone. I don't know.
Yeah. The case is pretty interesting. Like, basically, everyone is getting, like, a strange occult marking is showing up on the faces of people who then go mad and start murdering people. But often when the people are captured or killed, the mark fades away. So it's like a giant scar that disappears. Obviously, you know, they're mind-possessed or the
cult's
involved.
And it's got kind of like...
Or whatever.
A bigger conspiracy going on with like secret societies and like the government.
Yeah, but so like they'll do like awesome stuff like where the symbol is like the framing device for panels and like they just do like overhead. You know, it's very creative art. Like so, like a lot of the European stuff, it's hyper detailed backgrounds and like slightly cartoony people.
The art is great,
but just goes together so well.
Yeah.
But it almost sounds like if you want to read something like this, you'd be better off maybe reading like Fatal or. Darwin Diaries or something like that.
Yeah, well, I'd say the problem is that, like, he's great at drawing, but I feel like there's a lot of action in it. Not a lot, but when it has these big scenes that are full of action, it feels like it just doesn't come across very well.
Yeah, well, the action scenes usually last, like, three panels or
right,
something.
So it seems really rushed. Like, it's kind of like if you're seeing, like, a fight in a movie and it just cuts really quickly.
Yeah.
So you're kind of missing what happens.
There's, like, this huge fight going on, and it's just, like, three panels, and then they talk for, like, 20 panels or something.
So,
like,
yeah, so like, I think it just might be that it's written, you know, where they didn't have the space, like, it overwrote on the plot and didn't give space for the exciting moments of
this. It's weird. Like, I feel like I would have really liked this if it wasn't so wordy.
Yeah, because, man, there are some cool scenes in this, but, yeah.
Or maybe even if it was longer.
I think that's what it is. I think he just tried to cram too much down into this. I mean, it's an ongoing series, but this is, you know, tying up the first case, although there's obviously loose ends, but yeah.
So Spooks, doesn't sound like it's a big high recommendation.
Not compared to the rest of the Cinebook line. There's definitely a lot of better ones, but yeah.
It's high.
Yep.
All right, cool. Well, so let's move on to something else then. Let's move on to a very exciting release for this week. This is The Underwater Welder.
The best.
By Jeff Lemire. And drawn by Jeff Lemire. Jeff Lemire has been away from I guess he's still been doing Sweet Tooth pretty consistently, but before he got doing Sweet Tooth and his DC books, he was kind of known as a guy that did graphic novels, and it's been a while since he did one, and it's exciting to see him back, and this one is super amazing.
And you read this one, right?
I did read this one. Maybe I will tell people what the plot of the Underwater World
is. What
is
it about? Try to tell us without ruining all the awesome twists.
How do you tell people what this is about without
it's
ruining
a father and son story?
Talk about it, themes.
It is the story of a father and a son, and the responsibilities of being a father, I think is kind of the main theme in this. And it's what should I say?
Well, okay, so
all right, so it's about this main character, Jack.
Yeah.
And his wife is pregnant, and they live in the town where Jack grew up. Yeah. And his job is he's an underwater welder.
Yeah.
So he basically she's 9 months pregnant, and he's leaving to go work at this rig. Basically,
it's an oil rig. Yeah, an oil rig,
working underwater for a few weeks, and she maybe feels like he's abandoning her, sort of. And he goes there, and there's kind of like an accident, and he has to come back home, but he sees something when he's there. I'm not going to say what it is because I feel like it's such an important thing in the book.
Yeah,
but that's drawing him back to it. That has something to do with his relationship with his father.
Yeah, so it's bringing up memories that he'd maybe forgotten about his dad and what happened to his father.
And this is all taking place around Halloween, which is when his father died when he was a child, which is something that's revealed very early on. So I don't think that's saying too much. And so throughout the rest of the book is after that is kind of weaving the story of the night of his father's death and the time leading up to it, and the story of him now and how he's working, how he is potentially becoming his father or becoming his own man, and it's great.
Yeah, because he's about to become a father. His wife's about to give birth, so he's kind of at that point where he's like, am I going to be my father, or, you know, what's going to happen to me now?
Yeah, what I just said.
And he's going through that while at the same time on this weird obsessive search, like underwater for something tied to all of that.
Yeah, I said that too.
But yeah, there's also like Damon Lindelof does the intro to this, and he describes it, I think, pretty aptly as the best Twilight Zone episode that you never saw, because we are hinting around the really weird stuff in the middle of this story.
But I think giving any of that away is
that's
like
what I'm saying, though. That
saying too much.
There's strange things that begin going on, but just all that make the story super strong and like. Just such good characters, like, oh, man.
Yeah, and I think that really interesting. That theme of, like, the responsibility of adulthood and of, like, being a father and, like, not becoming your father, which is, like, a thing that, you know, is, like, a big thing for a lot of people, is really strong in this book and really strongly told. And it's got a very emotional ending, and it's just a really interesting story that can be interpreted in a number of different ways,
It unfolds so well, and like I was constantly unsure what was going to happen, but I was just drawn into it. I just couldn't wait to see what happened next.
Yeah. There was at least like 6 or 7 pages where I was like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, there are definitely a couple really big things.
Yeah.
As much as there's like a lot of dialogue and storytelling in this, there are also definitely a few scenes that kind of are something more than that.
Yeah. And the other thing is, we're just hitting up on the story. The art in this is like, he does some amazing stuff, especially because so much of it is working with like when Jack is working underwater, and he's got all these like awesome cut panels of like when he's diving down to work on the rig, or just like with, you know, as the background with panels on top of it of him thinking back to his childhood, or just like great contrast, and but a lot of cool he does so many good things in this comic. It's amazing.
I don't want to say too much more about it because the art's
so good.
The art's great. The main thing about this is he creates a really good mood. He does, his watercolor is great. There are a few little issues with lettering here and there, where word balloons cut off in weird places.
Oh, really?
But that's just a very small thing, but
yeah,
I for some reason feel the need to mention things like that all the time. But a really, really fantastic book, and one of the most kind of emotionally resonant graphic novels I've probably read all year.
Long time.
You know, a while.
Yeah, this year. Maybe. As far as emotional resonance go.
Yeah.
It's great.
All right, yeah, so that's Underwater Welder.
Highest recommendation.
Our highest recommendation. Yeah. All right, so we just got a couple more things. First up, we're going to talk about Shock, the Journey of a Great White.
We've been talking about it a while.
We definitely have. But
finally,
this
we have it.
This is by Matt Dambisky, friend of the show, friend of the Earth.
Yep.
From
friend of the ocean.
He is a friend.
He
of
is
the
a
ocean.
Friend of the ocean, and that this comic touches on his friendship with the ocean a little bit.
All right. So the main story in this is the main character is Shock, which is the Mayan word, as it is told in the beginning of it, for demon fish, which might be the source for the English word shark.
And also so, sounds like Jacques Cousteau.
Yeah.
Shock. Who also was underwater a lot.
But yeah, so Shock is the name given to a young female great white shark,
yep,
who is in the beginning of the comic chowing down on some really cute seals off of the coast of San Francisco.
It's a theme that runs through the whole comic.
It is, yeah.
Eating things.
But the main plot is basically it is the time of the year when the great whites migrate from the California coast out to Hawaii where they give birth. And so Shock is feeling the biological urge to get on that trip. And that's the main plot of it. But the themes of this book are like pollution and, you know, biology and like the circle of life and, you know, the balance of, you know, species, you know, battling and eating each other in the oceans and the interactions with, you know, humans on the ocean and stuff. It's just a lot of that stuff. All just with a travel adventure.
Yeah, it's like kind of like a road trip movie with a great white and her friend, a sea turtle that she meets.
Yeah.
A loggerhead turtle that she meets. And it's them basically taking the journey together, and they encounter like all sorts of crazy sea life, and you see like some of the dangerous stuff going on, and they kind of make this weird.
So what Jared just said.
So they make this weird. Well, they have this weird friendship that's kind of like
slightly antagonistic.
Like Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one is supposed to eat the other, so they're kind of like...
But Jacques's like, man, don't eat me.
And there's actually
a big shark.
There's almost like a kind of very sweet moment between them at one point in the
book.
Yeah,
there's some good stuff in
here. No, it's good. It's kind of a short read.
Yeah.
But it's
because the dialogue is minimal. Like this is not a silent comic for first. Like Matt actually gives the animals all dialogue bits, but they're kind of written in the tone of an animal, so they're not like... So they're certainly not like, you know, very overwritten.
Yeah, they're not like, geez, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
it's a gnarly wave.
Yeah, they kind of have their own way of speaking, which is interesting. Yeah, and I thought it was good. I thought, I don't know. There's not a lot to say about this book, I feel like. It definitely, it touches on, I'm just going to say this stuff Jared already said. I feel like Jared described what this book is about pretty well. I will say the art's great. Matt does a really good job.
He can draw some sea creatures.
Drawing sea creatures. Yep. And it seems like he did a lot of research. There's some interesting like facts in the back about sharks.
Footnotes.
And like a glossary and like some like further reading, which I think is pretty cool. The coloring in this book by Evan Keeling is also.
Another local DC guy.
Very cool, and
I will say I like the ending.
Yeah, the ending. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, I get where the ending.
Yeah,
is
it's
coming
a
from.
Natural
it's just,
kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, it is a natural ending. It's the ending's a little dark.
Yeah,
but it wasn't dark.
Yeah, yeah, no, but yeah, it kind of caught me off guard a little bit. I don't know how I feel about it, but there were a couple typos in the book, which I hate to mention, but it's a little weird.
It happens from time.
Yeah, it happens, but it definitely doesn't take away from the enjoyment.
Yeah, overall, it's pretty good. Like, I read it. You know, it only took me about an hour. Well, less than that. Like half an hour. Or so, but it reads really well from beginning to end. It's fun, and I learned a lot about sea life. That's true.
yeah, me too. Yeah, no, it's definitely a cool book. I would recommend it. It's not like a lot of other stuff, which is interesting.
It's different, which
I think
good.
I think that's like the best thing about it. Like, I haven't read a book that's like this.
No,
book.
Yeah. And it's also educational without being dull, which I feel like a lot of comics that have like ideas in them. They're like, this week, we got to talk about sea life and stuff, and you're just like, oh God, why did you do this? You know?
Yeah, if you like cute animals, it's probably not a good one for you because there's definitely some terrible stuff that happens in here. Yeah. But overall, a good read. Good job, Matt.
Yep.
Good job, buddy.
We're going to try to get Matt on here to talk about this a little bit
at some point.
Yeah,
why not?
I thought on Saturday, but I'm going to be in New York, so it's not going to happen.
Good
All right, so we've got one more book this week. We're going to end on a big downer. This is Extreme X-Men number 1. This is written by Greg Pak and Steven Segovia, and it has art by...
That's Steven Segovia.
Okay. Sorry. I thought they co-wrote it. Yeah. This is written by Greg Pak and Steven Segovia, and it has art by Steven Segovia. Yeah. So this is Exiles, basically.
Yeah.
If people don't know what Exiles is,
I don't.
It's Extreme X-Men.
I'm trying to forget Extreme X-Men, what is Exiles?
Basically, this is a book that is about dimension hopping team of X-Men that go around from different alternate realities.
Yeah. It's a spinoff from a recent story in Astonishing X-Men where Cyclops went to this world with like a bunch of Xavier heads and like old Wolverine and kid Nightcrawler and weird Demifrost. And when he left them kind of in disarray. So he's like trying to go back. And I don't know, Dazzler shows up and she creates this guitar.
Did you not read this?
She makes a guitar that helps them sync up with like the other realities.
I must have blanked.
But then she starts rocking out too hard, and it like opens up like a dimensional portal that's too big.
Yeah, and so
she's
like,
shredding on it. She's like, they're like, yeah, be careful, and she's like, nah, man.
Did I blank out that section?
Like, have you seen the Masters of the Universe movie?
And so basically
that happens in this issue.
Yeah, so basically she has a guitar that she can use to travel between realities and shoot stuff out of it, like kind of amplify her powers and shoot like bolts out of it and stuff. And
so here's what I do. Is that Octopus Professor X?
Yes.
Okay.
So their mission.
I love our job.
they find out that because of all this craziness that's happened in Astonishing X-Men, they've awoken a bunch of evil Charles Xaviers in different dimensions that are going to end everything. And so they have to go to kill them all, basically. And the first one they fight is a giant octopus Professor X.
A little derivative of the Fantastic Four story, I feel like, that was coming out a couple years ago. But just in that sense, of all the different Reed Richards universes. But yeah, I mean, this is... It's fine. It's not terrible. The art's okay.
Yeah,
it's got that problem of you look at the cover, which is fantastic. It's like this guy Julian Totino Tedesco does this like awesome cover on here.
Yeah. Yep.
And then you open it up, and the art by Alex Segovia is fine. It's just like not anything too terribly exciting. The story is a little weirdly rushed and like too much stuff going on
at
the same time.
It'll have slow parts and then rush really quickly through some big stuff.
And there's funny stuff like Dazzler like messing with this Dazzler impersonate, like male Dazzler impersonator and stuff at the beginning. Yeah, I thought it was really funny that she's like jamming on her axe to like open up a dimensional portal. Yeah. And you know, like the stuff we said, like Dr. Octopus,
Professor Octopus,
Professor X. I'm like
Dr. Xavier,
Dr. X, which is the name of a heavy metal band that my friend was in, is like an octopus. I don't know, but it's at the same time, is this Wolverine's brother?
Who?
James Howlett? Or is that Wolverine?
That's Wolverine, yeah.
Oh, I thought his name was John or something.
No, James, man. Where
that's
you been?
Wolverine, bro.
And, yeah, so this seems very similar to, like, say, Quantum Leap or Exiles.
It's exactly like Exiles.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly the same. So I was a little disappointed. I was excited about this series, and I think I'll check it out, though.
Yeah.
I'll read further. It wasn't bad.
Yeah. I'm good.
Yeah,
I got my fix.
I'll be curious because I really liked Exiles, and I thought the most interesting thing about it was seeing what the setting was for each different story.
That's true.
And so they'll probably grab me with some setting in here. But beyond that, it wasn't too terribly exciting.
Yeah. It was just whatever.
Oh well. Well, that was it for this week.
There we go, kids.
Yeah, it was
not a huge week, but
Underwater Welder came out, and Shock,
so good.
And
Jeff Lemire, two awesome books.
Double Lemire action.
Yeah, it was a Lemire twofer. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, so yeah, we'll be back next time with more news, reviews, and things from the world of comics.
We're working on that tagline and getting it out a little smoother.
Yeah, I just decided to have a tagline while I was in the middle of a sentence, and it didn't work out very well.
Let's go eat some hot dogs now.
Should we eat some hot dogs? I don't have any hot dogs. Oh, well, I'm going to go get some.
I'm going to go steal some from your house.
Well, you'll have to wait for me to get them. Anyway, let's just end this podcast. That's the important thing. All right, see you guys later.
See ya.